Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining us now is Ken Siegel. He's the guy who put the I in iMac, which later became the I in iPod, iPad, iEverything, and he was a member of the team that created Apple's legendary Think Different advertising campaign. He's also served as creative director for IBM, Intel, Dell, and BMW, and now he's written a book called Insanely Simple, The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. We'll ask him how he thinks Apple became the most profitable technology company in the world and whether they can still claim they think different now that we know that they, too, are structured to avoid billions in tax liability, according to an article over the weekend, and that they rely on cheap labor abroad like other multinational companies. But Ken Siegel, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks to be – glad to be here.
You say, first off, that the secret to Apple's success is the simple stick. That's the title of the introductory chapter or the introduction to your book, The Simple Stick. What's that?
Well, that was actually just one of the more interesting experiences I had. As the book leads off, there was a meeting, and afterwards I had asked somebody how it had gone when they presented to Steve Jobs, and basically the answer was, well, not so good. He hit us with the simple stick. And apparently that was a thing that happened, obviously a lot. I experienced it myself. I just thought it was a kind of a neat expression because basically that's what Steve did. When people brought anything to him, he would judge its worth, and if he needed to, he would hit it with a simple stick.
Simple how? Because the technology itself is not simple. Was the original Macintosh simple?
Actually, yeah. I think you have to look at the totality of it. Macintosh was extremely simple given the other computers that were out there. You know, the first time people were able to work with a graphical interface instead of the command lines. I think it's important to make the differentiation that simple, as you point out, these devices that Apple makes are anything but simple technologically, and they allow people to do some really amazing things. So simple doesn't mean dumbed down. It really just means easier to do amazing things.
You break up the book into 10 elements of simplicity, and chapter one is Think Brutal. Why brutal?
Well, I started with that one because I think that's the trait most associated with Steve, which is true in varying degrees. But the point of that chapter was that Steve had this brutal honesty going for him. And I think that really is an essential thing for any business, any organization, is just a very basic thing. Be honest with one another and don't pull punches. Let people know where they stand. And Steve certainly did. In my book, I give an example. The first time I met him, he gave me
What year is this?
Pardon me?
What year would that be?
Oh, that would be 1997.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I take that back. That's when he came back to Apple. This was back in the late 80s. When I first met Steve, I was working on Next Computers. I was the creative director for the agency handling that account. And the very first time I was trotted into a room to meet Steve, he gave me a big smile, and he gave me a great compliment, and then followed immediately by an insult about my work I had been doing for Apple. Previously, when I'd worked there, John Sculley was head of Apple at the time. He told me that my television work was really good, but my print was expletive here.
So he was brutally honest.
Yeah, he was. And it's funny because I didn't – you know, it really isn't an insult. He was just being honest. I liked this work. I didn't like that work. And as I would look back in later years, that was pretty much a theme for the tone of our conversations. He didn't try to spare your feelings, obviously. He was Steve Jobs.
After an extensive naming process, the first product released to distinguish Apple – was the computer known as the iMac, which I gather you named. Now, with iPad, iPod, iPhone, we don't even remember the iMac anymore. We just think of the Mac. So tell us the story of how the iMac came to be.
Well, first of all, I resent the implication that they don't remember the name iMac.
Well, they don't use it anymore.
Well, they do. you know, you walk into the store. That's desktop computers are obviously becoming less important in the post-PC world, as they call it. But iMac is still thriving. But the story about how that came to be is really one of the more amusing ones. And it really – I'll tell you the story, but it really says something about the way Steve worked, which is interesting too, in that he had this computer. It was really the first thing he had the engineers work on when he arrived. He said, we first have to have a home computer. We have to redo Apple's entire product line. And we want to rethink the home computer. So we see this thing. You know, it's unveiled to us when it's finally done several months later. And it was amazing. You know, nobody saw a computer like that, blue, transparent, see-through plastic kind of stuff. You'd see the guts of the machine. It was just really, really different. And it was blue. It didn't look like the beige towers we had become used to. So he said, well, we need a good name for it, and I got one that I really like a lot. Maybe you guys can beat it, but the name I like is MacMan. And we all looked at each other and sort of grimaced because we thought it was pretty bad. But Steve thought it was
cool.
Not
to mention gender specific.
Exactly. And in fact, funnier still is that when he gave us the parameters of the name, if we were to think of a better one, he said he didn't want it to be He didn't want it to sound like a portable because the iMac had this big handle on the top, but it weighed like 50 pounds. It was just there for convenience for moving from room to room. So I don't want to mislead people into thinking it's portable. So we're thinking, well, MacMan sounds like Walkman. That sounds pretty portable. And he also said, because it looks so Jetsons-like, we don't want people to think it's a toy. It's a real Mac. So it shouldn't sound like a toy. So we're thinking, well, MacMan sounds like Pac-Man. So wow. He's kind of like, on two counts, he's, you know, going against his own instructions. So, but he said, you know, if you guys can do better, let's hear it. So we went off and did our work and came back with five names. You know, we had hundreds of names, distilled it down to that. And the way, you know, ad people work, we made a presentation board for each name, very simple, but it had just like the big name and a couple of bullet points for why it was good. And you do that thing where you just, you know, you position, I'm going to show them this one first and that one, whatever, and you work up to the big one, iMac, and you're so waiting for him to, you know, just sing the praises and say you've solved it, and he goes, I don't like it. So he didn't like any of the names, and he said, at the beginning, I should say, he said, you got 2 weeks to figure this out because we got to go into manufacturing and there's just no time. This is a big rush thing. So he said, well, now you got a week to come up with a better name. So we go back, we work a bit more. We return with, I don't think, five names. I think there were three new ones. And then I pulled iMac out of the bag again because, you know, when you really believe in something, you really should keep bringing it back. As long as you show new stuff, that's allowable. So we showed him the new stuff. He didn't like any of those. Then we showed him iMac and said, we still have heart for this one. And his reply then was, well, I don't hate it this week, but I still don't like it. So now you got 2 days.
How did you explain iMac? Well, was the letter I supposed to be like the word I? People would, you know, identify it like I means me?
That was one of the meanings. On that board, I wish I had it still. It would be kind of a fun souvenir, but I have no idea where it went. The I stood for Internet, first of all, which, you know, is fairly obvious. And that was the purpose of the iMac, was an easy way to get on the Internet, which sounds, you know, kind of like a joke today because it's not that hard to get on the Internet. Another big thing about it was you can get an email address, which was also a big thing in that day. But anyway, so I was Internet, but it was also I, the individual. It was I for imagination, I for interactive. We started putting all these I things to it, thinking that might take you somewhere. But we also did think, like, you know, this would be, you know, this preface, this letter would be a good foundational element for other products. So we ended up with iBook and iMovie and iLife and all that kind of stuff that followed.
And it obviously worked. And did you ever get the love from Steve Jobs later after the fact? They come back to you and say, gosh, Ken, I mean, now we have the iPad, the iPod, the iPhone. You know, the world is going crazy for our iStuff. Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Yes, exactly like that. No, that's not the way Steve worked. And everyone knew that. He, you know, he would stand on stage and get credit for these things, and that was fine because he was the person who directed all these efforts. The funny ending of the iMac story is that after he said he still didn't like the name and we had 2 days to figure it out, I called – I was talking to one of my contacts over at Apple the next day, and was told that he was silk screening the name on the computer and he was showing it to people. And it seemed that it was taking on a little momentum. And he not only has never said anything to me in later years, but he never said anything to me at the time. Suddenly it was just iMac.
We have a question on our webpage from Sheldon from Brooklyn, who asks, how does the guest feel about the apparent demise of Sony, a company that did the exact opposite of Apple in terms of integration of content and hardware?
Well, that's a great question, and it's interesting to point out that back when we were doing the iMac and Steve was proposing MacMan, one of the reasons he liked that name, he said, and remember, this was a time before Apple was involved in consumer electronics. It was all computers at that time. He said, you know, it sounds a little bit like Walkman, and that sounds like kind of a Sony thing. But I got to tell you, Sony is a great consumer electronics company. And if we could get a little bit of a rub off with that kind of name with our product, I think that would be a good thing. And I'm sure, you know, later, you know, in Steve's life, he probably would deny ever having said that because Sony wasn't exactly a great example of what he wanted to be anymore. But I think it is sort of ironic.
Or he might have had to deny it in court.
That's true, too.
Before you go, yeah, let's talk about just for a minute, and I know you're not with Apple anymore, so it's not your doing, but the front page New York Times story yesterday about how Apple has a, shall we say, creative system of avoiding taxes. There's also been recent blowback, of course, blowback about Apple's labor practices, particularly in China. So how do you think Apple can continue to claim that it thinks different if they're doing what every other multinational corporation does by avoiding U.S. taxes and utilizing cheap labor?
Well, I think the tax situation is one, to be honest, I haven't studied enough to really have an intelligent opinion on. I've been reading a bit about it, and it does seem as if, as you said, you know, everyone else is doing it, blah, blah. So I hesitate to comment on that one. I actually think the labor situation in China is an interesting positive story for Apple. Let's say it could become that. As we all know, it was a situation where all these companies are using cheap Chinese labor. So it's not as if Apple is the only offender, but Apple is the leader and they probably make more stuff than anybody. So it's a bigger, bigger problem. I think it was really interesting that Tim Cook actually went to China and toured the factories. And it's an interesting question. You know, you could debate amongst yourself whether Steve would ever would have done that. He was concerned about the situation, but he, you know, his health was going down, and who knows whether he would have gone if he could have gone, that kind of thing. But Tim did go, and I think the result is a really interesting thing, that they had this study commissioned, or that they consented to it, and labor violations were found, and Apple is saying we are going to correct these, and they're saying that the prices of their products probably will go up a bit as a result to help solve this problem. And now all the Dells and HPs and Acers of the world are going to have to also raise their prices because they have the same labor force. So the question is, if Apple didn't do what they're doing now, would anything ever change in China? So I think in an interesting way, even though it's taken quite a while, and I can't say everyone has behaved like angels, I do think that Apple is leading the way to effect some very positive change.
And the pressure, I think, came to bear on Apple because it is so big, even though the other computer makers were doing similar things, just as once upon a time the pressure came to bear on Nike, even though other
exactly.
sneaker makers were doing similar things. And consumers, for their part, don't seem to care at all because of these numbers out. Just the other day, Apple profits beat expectations for the first quarter of 2012 by a lot. They made $11.6 billion, driven by the record sales of iPhones and iPads. They sold over 30 million iPhones, almost 12 million iPads, huge increases, more than projected. And this was at the same time that the publicity was peaking about the labor practices.
Right.
So bad for social justice, good for Apple. I guess it's evidence to companies that if they have a good enough product, they can ignore these social justice movements?
Well, no. I think – and again, this isn't my area of expertise, so I hesitate to accuse anybody of anything. But I think Apple has responded well to the situation and is affecting change. And I can comment on things that happened while I was in the room with Steve Jobs when certain things would transpire. I really think, and it's part of the simplicity thing that I talk about in my book, that Steve had this he was really a very moral person. He liked to do the right thing. And I think it hurt him when people accused him of not doing the right thing. Because just in the course of doing our daily business with him, when there were decisions to be made, he would really do the logically correct thing, maybe the more expensive thing, because he thought it was the right thing. That was the way he worked. And I think as the company got bigger and bigger, to the point where they're the most valuable company on earth, and all these issues start floating around, it's very easy for people to attack them. You know, as we know, people tend to attack the biggest and most successful. So how they deal with that will be an interesting thing. Tim Cook is facing a situation that Steve probably never did, being as big as they are today.
We've been speaking with Ken Siegel, who put the I in Apple Computer's vocabulary and in their alphabet, about his book, Insanely Simple, The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. You can find him at kensiegel.com/blog and follow him on Twitter at ksiegel. Thank you very much for joining us. Really,
it was my pleasure. Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we're going to open up the phones for anybody who plans to do anything tomorrow for May Day. Call us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Of course, May Day, traditionally a day that celebrates the labor movement and workers' rights, though not that much in this country. But tomorrow, Occupy organizers are calling for a general strike. So you call in right now. Let's take the last few minutes of the program to tell us what you're planning to do for May Day, and we'll cover it a lot tomorrow. 212-433-WNYC right now. 212-433-9692. What are you planning to do to observe the strike on May Day? If anything, we'll take your calls right after this.